built into the damp wall of the ship. There was no room to sit up, barely room to roll over. He had to lie on his back, feeling the huge movement of the waves lifting and dropping him like driftwood, looking at the planks of the bunk above him. To his right, against the skin of the ship, he could feel the slap of the waves and the whisper of their ripples. To his left was the slatted door, for which he had paid extra for the little space and privacy it gave him. The other, poorer emigrants slept side by side on the floor of the tween deck, like animals in a barn. They had been loaded like baggage into the waist of the ship with the crew's quarters at the stern behind them and the captain's tiny cabin and the cook's galley and cabin all in one in the prow before them. The captain would not allow passengers out on deck except for the briefest and most grudging spells in fine weather. The crew, going on watch, trampled over the passengers, and when they were returning to their shared hammocks in the stern, dripped water all over them. The emigrants were always in the way. They were regularly cursed. They were less than cargo. Their bundles and boxes were piled up among their owners in a careless muddle. But as the days wore on into weeks, families established their own little seats and bunks out of crates of chickens and bags of clothes. The stench was appalling. There were two buckets provided, one for washing water, one for excrement, and there was a strict rota for emptying the soil bucket over the side. The captain would not allow them to do this more than once a day, and when it was Jay's turn to carry the brimming pail to the side, his stomach heaved. There was scarcely enough water to drink, and it came warm and tasting of the barrel. There was hardly enough food. A lumpy porridge for breakfast, the same for dinner, and a biscuit and a slice of old cheese at night. It would have been a nightmare, but the voyage was sustained by hope. They were a shipful of gamblers, a handful of families who had thrown in their lot with a land they had never seen and whose dangers and promises they could hardly imagine. Jay thought they were the most foolhardy, impulsive, brave people he had ever met, and he did not know whether to fear them as madmen or admire them as heroes. They were lucky. 70 days into the voyage, as the temperature rose and the children cried and cried for fresh water and a breath of air, they sighted Barbados and sailed into port for one blissful week of rest, as the captain sold his English goods and took on rum and sugar, food and fresh water. They were allowed to go ashore and barter for provisions, to eat fresh fruit for the first time in more than 2 months. When the ship was due to sail, the return to the festering hold was more than many of them could bear. A number of emigrants left the ship, but most of them gritted their teeth and endured the next leg of the voyage, Jay grimly among them. It was another full 40 days at sea before a sailor opened a hatch and bellowed down, "Make yourselves ready! We have sighted land!" Even then, they were not allowed up on deck. Jay gathered with the others, looking imploringly upwards to the open hatch. The sailor laughed unkindly.
"Wait below," he said. "There's no room for you all."
It was evening. Jay, accustomed to the foul smell of the tween decks, smelled a fresh new scent on the air. Damp earth, which reminded him suddenly, poignantly, of the garden at Lambeth after rain and the wet, fresh smell of leaves.
"Land," the woman next to him said, her voice hushed with awe. "Land! The new land! Our new land!"
Jay guessed, from the noises of running feet and the shouted commands, that they were dropping sail. The wave stopped heaving the ship up and down, and instead they felt the insistent, pattering slaps of a tidal river. Then there were shouts of greeting and replies from the sailors.